95.
This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that the opinions expressed on any public affairs show do not reflect those of KX935, its management, or the board of directors.
Good morning, Laguna Beach, Orange County, and to all our friends joining us today. Coming to you from the heart of the village in beautiful Laguna Beach, California, you're listening to Laguna Roundtable with smart talk and bold perspectives. Brought to you by your Laguna Roundtable co-hosts, Jim Kennedy and Dr. Ari Grayson on KX93.5.
Good morning, Laguna. This is Righty Jim. Dr. Ari Grayson is on vacation, so you're going to get a full hour of my solo performance this morning, educating you and enlightening you on the news and events going on in Laguna and locally and around the world. It's a partly cloudy, actually a mostly cloudy morning out there, about 63 degrees, a little bit of drizzle as I came in this morning. It is forecast to be AM clouds, PM sun, and a high of 75 today. So everybody out there should be able to get some tanning in later on this afternoon if you are doing that with a high SPF, I guess. That way you don't get burned, shall we say. And we're going to keep you from getting burned by the politics going on here. We're going to start off with a little bit of our little bit of news, and we'll cover a couple of topics and a little bit of music mixed in there. My co-host, Dr. Ari, should be back next week, and we should have another live show where we get to go head-to-head on the various issues and topics going on in the country and locally in Laguna. We also have coming up in a couple of weeks, we'll get you the exact date, hopefully next week, that our new police chief Farina, will be on for the hour, and we will be talking to her about the various issues affecting policing in Laguna and affecting the citizens in Laguna. So that should be a show you want to watch for. Check out our Facebook and Twitter feed. Facebook is Laguna Roundtable on Facebook. Twitter for myself is Righty Jim. And we also have a blog, lagunaroundtable.wordpress.com for out there for stories that we occasionally write out there. And that pretty much is how you can get to it. Oh, also, you can email us, lagunaroundtable@gmail.com. Always love your input and your suggestions, comments, questions, any topics you think we should be covering, or guests you would like us to see have on the show. So moving into the program this morning, we'll start off with a little bit of news. Unfortunately, we have a little bit of sad news to start the program off with. Joe Biden, Vice President of the United States of America. Unfortunately, his son passed away yesterday. Beau Biden, 46, died of brain cancer. He was a two-term attorney general for the state of Delaware, I believe. He was also in the Army JAG Corps because he, I believe, was deployed overseas as part of his JAG or as part of his Army commitment. He'd served two terms in as I said, attorney general of Delaware. Was did not run for re-election last year because he was going to plan to run for the governor of the governorship of Delaware next year in 2016. Unfortunately, passed away yesterday down in Texas at A.G. Anderson Medical Center. So hearts and prayers go out to Mr. Biden and his wife, Dr. Jill Biden. Very, very sad thing. Let's move on to some other news. Speaking of politics and presidentials and vice presidents, we had a couple of more entrees into the political 2016 campaign who threw their hats into the ring this week. In addition to those that are already in the ring and making news, on the Democratic side, we have a contender. Actually, I believe Bernie Sanders on Monday, on Memorial Day, officially announced his campaign for which he had already announced, but this time was at an event rather than just an announcement. I don't understand how these things work. Hillary Clinton will be doing a formal campaign announcement event, I believe sometime in June, to offset the YouTube campaign announcement she already made. So, like, if you really didn't believe she was running, give it a couple weeks and she'll do an event where she'll announce that she's really, really, really running. Maybe Bill will be there. Maybe some of the campaign donors from the Clinton Foundation will be there. Maybe her email server will be. Nah, I'm pretty sure her email server won't be there. So maybe Chelsea will be there, and they'll have the baby they can show off and for wonderful political propaganda. But because Hillary is a grandmother, because when you think Hillary, you think grandmother. No, not grandmother. No. But who is in the campaign this week? Martin O'Malley. Who is Martin O'Malley? Yes, you may have heard of the name before. He was the mayor of Baltimore. Yes, that fine, upstanding example of that shining star on the hill of liberalism, of liberal politics. Baltimore, yes, I'm sure he's very proud of his tenure there. He was mayor of Baltimore from 1999 to 2007, upon which he ran and won the governorship of Maryland, and he served from 2007 till January of 2015, a couple of months ago. So, as any other politician, out of the job, need to get back on the, need to collect a check from the public, what do I do? Hey, let's run for president. So, he will be the third Democrat to toss his hat into the ring. Just to get an idea of some of his politics, while he was governor of Maryland, he signed bills for illegal aliens to get in-state tuition. I'm not sure how that works. If you're an illegal alien, wouldn't you be a resident technically of the country you illegally came here from rather than a state that you're illegally living in? So I don't sure how that works. And he also signed a bill for gay marriage, whichever that is, since marriage is between a man and a woman. So can he challenge Hillary is the question. Well, he might be able to challenge her on some idea. You know, there's a lot of people, from my understanding, in the Democratic Party that aren't excited over Hillary. They figure that Hillary is their best chance to win. So they'll get behind Hillary. But if they had another bright, shining light, now you seem to be using that metaphor quite a bit this morning, they would be more than happy to find another candidate who could stand up there and in their opinion, pummel a Republican. So Martin O'Malley may or may not be that candidate, but any candidate that's in there from either Bernie Sanders or Martin O'Malley or Elizabeth Warren if she runs or anybody else if they run are going to be at a serious fundraising disadvantage to Hillary because Hillary's got all of her hundreds of millions. Though she did come out of the White House broke from what I understand. I've heard that somewhere. They'll have a hard time fundraising because Hillary's got a lot of the big donors locked up because she's the big name in the race. So she's the one that the people are throwing the money at if they're looking for their paybacks on Wall Street or their healthcare paybacks and so on and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Martin O'Malley. It'll be interesting to see what happens in debates, see how hard he and Bernie go after Hillary because Bernie is, just give you an idea of Bernie Sanders. He's a little bit to the left of Joe Stalin for the most part. Or actually let me rephrase it. He's a little bit to the left of Lenin. So that gives you an idea. He's an avowed socialist. He's one of two independents in the U.S. Senate. I believe a former governor of Maine, King, Augustus King, is the other independent that's in the Senate. So that's on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, we've had another gentleman throw his hat in the ring and one that has been in there before. Former Senator from Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum, entered the race with an inspiring speech on, I believe it was Thursday, in Pennsylvania. Toned down his religious rhetoric a little bit, is running a little bit more on blue-collar values. I believe he tossed the old sweater vest. He was known as Sweater Vest Rick by a lot of people for his love of sweater vests. Not there's anything wrong with that, but that seemed to be his trademark calling card. And he wore a suit, of course, with the obligatory white shirt and red tie and a navy blue suit for the announcement ceremony. So we'll see where Rick Santorum goes. He'll collect some money. I believe he's got a very large backer, a billionaire named Foster Freeze or something, I believe his name is, who backed Santorum before and supposedly will back him again this year. So that'll be interesting to see how that works out. I don't know if we discussed this previously, but the Fox News debates, they're going to be running the first debate. I believe it's in early August to start out, to kick off the old 2016 campaign debate, GOP campaign debate season, easy for me to say. And what they'll do is because there could be as many as 16 men and women running in this election or in this time for the Republicans, they are going to only allow the top 10 on the stage. For the debate. So they're going to do some sort of a compilation of different polls, and those that are in the top 10 of the polls will be on the stage. And if anybody from 11 on to whatever the number is not, they will not be in the debate. Now, CNN, I believe, will do the second debate, and they've announced that they are going to do a two-part debate. They will do a debate for the top 10 for like the first hour and a half, or the first, maybe just the first hour, and then the rest of the people, whether it be, well, I guess if it's one, they'd have to go to 11 because you wouldn't have one guy debating himself or one gal debating herself. So whatever's left over, 2, 3, 5, 7, 22, will go on and then debate in the second hour and a half, or the second hour of the debate. So that'll be kind of interesting. It seems like an odd way to do it, but then the way Fox does it too seems to be a little bit odd. I don't know why. I guess it really isn't feasible to put 16 people on a dais or on a platform at one time, because you're basically, at that point, you're going to each get what? If you did 2 hours with 16 people, you're just going to get what, 4 minutes? Well, with commercials, you're only talking roughly 88 or 90 minutes of actual showtime. So 16, you'd get like 5.5 minutes per person. By the time you did opening statements, closing statement, I think you'd get one question in. So, yeah, that doesn't really work unless you want to do it for 4 hours. And I'm guessing people aren't going to sit for 4 hours to watch 16 candidates on the GOP run for president. So we'll see how that works out. Like I said, that'll be an interesting, that shall be interesting. This is a story that will continue to give for the next, 16, 18 months for us. So to keep stay tuned, don't worry if you've missed this, because we'll be repeating it again. By the way, this show will be available on podcast in a couple of days up online, and I'll put out a tweet and a Facebook post for it. But any of our old shows are available online. And go through our Facebook page, Laguna Roundtable on Facebook. Or if you've got a question, grab me on Twitter at Righty Jim. Or again, you can check out our blog posts, Laguna Roundtable at WordPress.com. So moving on to the news, Cuba, our friends to the south, full of rum and cigars, have been taken off the terrorist watch list. Why is a question? Well, because President Barack Obama wants to normalize relations with them, and that's one of the steps to do that. You can't have normalized relations with people that you consider in the same group as Syria, Iran, North Korea. You know, not exactly people you're going to invite over for dinner with your mother or with your family. So evidently, there's also a rumor I've read that we may actually be announcing an embassy agreement with them next week on where the embassies will be and when they will be opening and when they will be staffed. So Obama's doing his best to violate the law and move along with normalizing relations with Cuba. And I guess it's actually within his purview, I guess. Not that the Congress stops him from doing really much of anything. But actually, he was dealt a setback this week, by the way, on the immigration issue. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld a Texas federal judge in Texas who's stopped completely in its tracks Obama's ability to give green cards to all illegals. So that's interesting. You'll have to keep following that one as that plays out. So I have a legal expert who says that will probably now go to the Supreme Court. Probably not an emergency appeal, because Antonin Scalia handles that, and I'm sure he's not going to accept an emergency appeal, but they may be able to appeal it, and sometime in the next court session, which will start the first Monday in October of 2015. So the 2015-16 Supreme Court may wind up hearing this case. So we'll see what happens on that, if that does happen. But keep in touch, keep listening, and we'll let you know what happens with that. By the way, talk about terrorism in Cuba. This is a country. Now, again, Cuba's pretty poor, so they don't have the ability to do much as far as terrorism. They don't have the oil that Iran does. I don't know where North Korea is getting its money from. I don't know who's funneling its money, because maybe China. I don't know, because it certainly is too poor to do much of anything other than feed people sand and dirt, unfortunately, poor people in North Korea. But Cuba does give weapons to the FARC rebels down in Colombia, so that is their contribution to world terrorism. I'm sure if they had more money, the Castro brothers would be happy to export their brand of socialism and terrorism around the world. But, hey, maybe we'll give them enough money to be able to do that as part of this deal. Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but so be it. Okay, and finally, we're going to be talking about a couple of topics after. We're going to take a short music break here in a couple of minutes. We'll have some, we're going to talk a little bit more about what I'm going to be talking about here. LA City Council passed a minimum wage hike to $15 by 2020. Interesting, though, the first thing that came out of this from the unions, who had kind of been backing this bill. Time out, unions. No, we don't want to be part of this bill. So the unions are advocating for the workers and workers' rights and lifting workers up and getting them more money. Do not want to be required to pay $15 an hour on union contracts. Now, a couple of people, or there's many people out there that are skeptical of this. What exactly is the motive of the unions on this? Some of it are saying is, well, you know, if they get an exemption, then they can say, hey, you know what, come and unionize with us, and you don't have to pay your workers $12 an hour under our union contract. So you can save $3 an hour. And then all the workers have to pay union dues. Union dues go to the union. They get more money. Then they get to filter it as their money laundering operation back to the Democratic Party and campaign contributions. And the union fat cats get to drive around in new Lincoln Town cars and get to buy new billiard tables for the union hall or for the union headquarters. You get to build shiny new buildings and all sorts of stuff that unions do when they're helping out workers by driving around in new town cars. So that'll be interesting. We're going to be covering this in the second half of the hour under our economic liberty topic. We're going to be talking about so. Okay, we've covered just about all of the news. There's quite a bit with the whole LA minimum wage hike. By the way, on the union exemption part, San Francisco and Chicago, D.C. and Seattle have recently just passed minimum wage hikes to this magical $15 an hour number. And interestingly enough, San Francisco and Chicago did exempt unions, two union hotbeds, whereas D.C. and Seattle, not quite as much union hotbeds, no. They didn't exempt the unions, so the unions are going to be required. This was first passed by SeaTac, Seattle-Tacoma, the little city that's where the SeaTac airport is, south of Seattle and north of Tacoma. It's the SeaTac airport. And they wanted all of the staff in the city, everybody that worked in the hotels and at the airport, to make $15 an hour. But they didn't exempt the unions, so all of the union jobs are now required to pay $15 an hour. And the same thing in Washington, D.C. But Washington, D.C. has got a fair amount of money because they spoon it off of the government. The federal government is responsible pretty much for funding a lot of what goes on in D.C. because they are a lot of what goes on in D.C. So we'll see how this works. Like I said, we'll be covering this in Economic Liberty in a segment we've got coming up in a couple of minutes. Let's take a little bit of a music break. We've got one off of our hot list. We have Empire from Of Monsters and Men. This is Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim Kennedy. Dr. Ari Grayson is on vacation. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Feel the ocean as it breathes, shimmering tea. See the mountains where they meet, smothering me as the wind fans off the waves. I count down the days, heavy stone. Fear no weather. Through
We are back. You're listening to Empire by Monsters of Monsters and Men. By the way, this is KX935. My apologies for not tagging the station, as I'm supposed to do. Laguna Roundtable with your host, Righty Jim Kennedy. Dr. Ari Grayson's on vacation and should be back next week. You know, as I talked about, we are at KX935, a community-supported radio station. And to help support the station, all of you can come out to the K-Exclusive next Saturday night, June 6th, 5 p.m., exclusive evening of Sunset Cocktails and Cuisine with special performances by Chris Barron of the Spin Doctors and the 133 Band, I believe, including our own. Coming up next, Jason Fetty at 9 o'clock with Full English Breakfast. So we will have moments for the upcoming film 133, The Road to Laguna, at the event, along with open bar craft beer pairings, probably provided by our friends at Straub Distributing. Wonderful craft beer pairings there. I'm sure maybe a little bit of Ninkasi or maybe a little bit of a couple of bootleggers or you know, maybe some other great local craft beers. Spectacular live auction and Laguna Beach ocean view from this exclusive residence. I don't think it's the same one we did the event at last year, but it's another awesome place with just absolutely killer views. We're going to have a bunch of extraordinary auction items like a stay at the Montage Catalina Presidential Suite or a trip for 10 to Telluride, Colorado. And raising funds will allow our nonprofit radio station to continue connecting Laguna Beach through music and talk. I do the talk part. The rest of the people pretty much do the music part. So if you have any questions, please contact the radio station, KX935, and you can buy your tickets online at kx935.com. So we really, really hope you guys come out and support that. We really need those events to support our station because we, are a community-supported station. So it's we're here thankfully because of people like you that are listening in to the Laguna Roundtable. And we appreciate you coming along and donating to those events. Without that, we wouldn't be able to put programs like this, excellent programs like this, on the air, or Jason Fetty's program at 9 o'clock, Full English Breakfast. So, okay, back to the news and politics. We were talking about, I was talking about the minimum wage hike in L.A., also San Francisco, Chicago, D.C., and Seattle. Now, what exactly is the reasoning or the basis behind this? Basically, it's part of this whole minimum wage push because we've had pretty much wage stagnation. We're not really seeing any real gains in the wage rate, especially under the Obama administration. It's been down. We have 53 million Americans on food stamps, which is a record high. We have a record low level of participation in the workforce. Labor participation rate is at a level not seen since the Carter administration. You'll get some people on the left that won't understand the math or the numbers and dismiss this as, oh, these are people retiring, these are the baby boomers. That's not what this is factored into. And that number is the number we currently have is significantly lower than predicted by the number of people, by the experts and the economists. By the way, economy this last quarter fell 0.7%. So how's that for your booming economy recovery, President Obama? All I hear are crickets. Nothing from the administration. I believe they blamed it on bad winter and global warming. Wait a minute, there's too much snow, so there's global warming. I don't get it. Don't try to figure it out. It'll give you a headache, so just don't go there. So great, you know, great economic news, down 0.7%. And what are they going to do to create more jobs? Let's raise the minimum wage so that if you're picking up a burger at McDonald's that they get the order wrong at and don't get your, you know, give you onions on your burger when you ask for no tomato, you will wind up then with a $15 an hour burger flipper. Well, no, you really won't wind up with a $15 an hour burger flipper. You'll wind up with a $15 an hour unpaid robot probably at some point, because you can probably replace the burger flipper and their errors and their mistakes for a lot cheaper with a robot. You don't have to pay $30,000 to a year plus benefits and days off. So we'll see how that works out as far as that. But it's interesting. Here's a comment on why this was done by the LA City Council president, Herb Wesson, pointing out the firing back of critics of the council was driven by labor demands. When LA decided to pursue a minimum wage increase, Wesson said, it was not because of the council's committee was carrying labor's water. It was not because of It was not because members of this of the council wanted to jam the business community. Instead, he said, we wanted to do our part in taking almost 1 million Angelenos, sorry, not Americans, because a lot of these aren't Americans, 1 million Angelenos from poverty to an opportunity to have a middle-class life. So the Democrats and the liberals, which are pretty much what runs L.A. and runs California, look at Governor Jerry Brown, look at the people running for Senate, Loretta Sanchez and A.G. Kamala Harris. They are, you know, people who buy into the Alinsky-lite Democratic political agenda. And they think that if you create them, if you create a high enough minimum wage, you'll make that a middle-class wage. Well, then what's lower class if minimum wage becomes middle class? That doesn't make sense. That sounds like swamping all boats helps others. So I don't even understand the logic, but then again, it's liberals and logic and liberals, you know, those two don't have a tendency to go together. So sorry about that. That's very, 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 very confusing. So I was talking about economic liberty. Well, what is economic liberty? Well, pointed this out because this is a perfect example of what is not economic liberty. Economic liberty is not the government raising the minimum wage. It is not the government mandating that your employer raise your wage. It is not Obamacare. It is not more food stamps for you. It is not anything involving the government doling out, controlling, modifying, regulating, requiring, or cajoling businesses through any sort of threats, legislation, bills, executive actions, not referendums, those are publicly driven, special legislation or anything else that allows you to earn a living. And when I say a living, I mean a living. I don't mean a living wage. I mean a living. I don't know what a living wage is, by the way. It's a term that's bantied around a lot by liberals. Well, you must pay a living wage. That's why this whole minimum wage thing is. You must pay a living wage. Really? What is a living wage? No one can ever explain that to me. Oh, well, it includes this and this. Okay, well, what about that? Sure. I mean, does that mean I get an iPhone every year? A new iPhone every year? Does that mean I get the cable? Does that mean I get the full DirecTV package? The platinum package or whatever it is, if that's a dish, I don't know. I'm a cable guy myself, so I don't know. I mean, do I get the HBO package on my cable? Do I get a 46-inch TV instead of a 32-inch? Is it not a living wage if I only afford a 32-inch HD TV? I never understand this. And no liberal, it's fair. Well, have news for you, folks. Here's a tip for you, okay? Anybody who makes an economic argument that involves the word fair isn't making an economic argument. They're making a political argument, okay? Because, frankly, as has been said about golf and Pete Dye, golf is not fair. Well, guess what? Economics is not fair. Economics is economics. It's a science. It's scientific. And it is not necessarily fair. Also, if you ask 50 liberals what fair is, 50 different answers will come out. Just like if you ask 50 different economists about the economic forecast, you'd probably get about 22 answers or so. So fairness, not an economic principle. It's a political argument, okay? So just remember that. They start throwing the word fair in there, ding, 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 ding. As a former professor of mine would say, the old effort dust detectors better go off because you know you're getting lied to. It's not about economics. It's about politics. So just be forewarned about that. So back to economic liberty. Economic liberty is dying in this country because of a number of things. It's funny. Interesting comment this week from, and I don't remember exactly what it was, Jim Cramer, the CNBC analyst, has his own show, Mad Money, and has the street.com website. Big backer of President Obama. Loved President Obama in 2008. I believe he voted for him again in 2012, though somewhat hesitantly. Now he's coming out and basically commenting on this and saying the government clearly just doesn't get this. So small businesses are being killed by the government. This is basically, remember, most job creation is done by small business. Economic activity does not come from, or sorry, large job growth does not come from the Fortune 500. Fortune 500 firms cycle in and out. And basically, before they become Fortune 500 firms, do most of their job growth. When they become Fortune 500 firms, they become, with the possible exception of Apple maybe, become large, bureaucratic, maybe occasionally bloated, and will not tend to be, generally, over any extended period of time, general net hiring in the Fortune 500 is pretty much about neutral. It's pretty much about zero when you take out layoffs versus new hires. Sometimes it's a little bit expanding, but most of the 98% of the job growth in America comes from small and medium-sized businesses, basically under 1,000 employees for the most part, maybe under 5,000 employees. That's where economic growth and economic activity come from. You're more than likely going to get hired by a firm that has less than 5,000 people than you are by than you are by IBM, Apple, Google, Exxon, Chevron, name your poison. They have millions of jobs. They have millions and millions of jobs. I believe there's, 400,000 people or something or more than that work at Walmart. So they employ lots of people. But on a net basis, they don't necessarily, now Walmart maybe a little bit because they're always adding stores. But for the most part, net hiring by the Fortune 500 is basically about zero over a long-term period. So SMB, small and medium-sized businesses, Jim Cramer, big, huge supporter of President Obama, just shaking his head. They just don't get it. Overregulation, Obamacare. If you wonder what happened to the 40-hour work week, you can kiss it goodbye courtesy of Obamacare. I believe the Republican Congress is working on changing that and dropping the 30-hour requirement for Obamacare. I believe they're going to make it a 40-hour requirement because tons of these firms, especially restaurants, let's say fast food like Applebee's, anything else, I believe places like Home Depot, Lowe's, a lot of those stores, a lot of people in retail, food service, that hire a lot of workers. We're cutting everyone to 29 hours because they didn't have to be responsible for Obamacare. Anyone over 50 employees. Maybe they're breaking the company up into two separate corporations, Company A and Company B, that's still owned by the same holding company. But now you've got, instead of having, 74 employees, you've now got 35 employees and 39 employees and two separate companies. Ding, 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 no longer 50. Don't need to pay Obamacare benefits. So it's people, the government looks at this and the Democrats go, but they're cheating. Well, no, you created incentive for them to find a workaround. American business has great powers of creativity and ingenuity, okay? That's what makes American business so good, okay? We're very smart people. We're creatively thought when you hang a dollar out in front of us. Same thing, when you hang a dollar, we basically try to take a dollar out of our pockets instead of hanging it out in front of us. We find really creative ways to keep you out of our pocket. And that's the problem here, is a lot of this stuff is a hindrance in economic liberty because it creates things where, okay, well, now, you know what? You want to work at Applebee's? Great job for people in college, maybe when people first out of the workforce from high school, first job, maybe their first full-time real job. Guess what? You get 29 hours a week now. Well, I can't live on 29. Well, sorry, that's all we can give you because we don't want to pay you Obamacare benefits. So thank you, federal government, for that. There are all of these pieces of legislation that are created by liberals and Democrats that you don't understand the consequences. They have a ton of unintended consequences. And then they're absolutely shocked that there's gambling when these bills come along and they turn out that but that was not the way it's supposed to work. Well, yeah, because you didn't think it through. Same thing that's going on right now in California. Cap and trade. And I don't know what the numbers are. My understanding is there's a really good letter or there's a really good article by Trilly Lundberg. If you're familiar with the Lundberg letter, father started the Lundberg letter back in the 60s. I think they're based out in Calabasas or somewhere out there, maybe Thousand Oaks. And Trilby Lundberg is his daughter. Now she runs the Lundberg letter. And she posted something on the cap and trade program that's going on in California. And I guess it's a very good read of talking about how when this was passed, the government assumed, we're going to stick it to the oil companies in California. Jerry Brown was, I apologize, this might have actually gone back as far as Schwarzenegger, who I did not support for governor. They said, we're going to stick it to the evil oil companies and we're going to make them pay for all of their carbon emissions. So we're going to put a fee on this and, they're going to pay for it. Well, no, they're not going to pay for it. Any fee, tax, assessment, blah, 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 that you add on to a company, they're going to pass it on. Same thing when Obamacare passed this 2% tax on medical device companies. Oh, well, the medical, all of the rich people that can afford all these expensive medical devices are going to be able to, the companies will pass along, all these huge conglomerates making billions off of medical devices, unfairly charging you for hip replacements and knee replacements. They're going to eat this and we're going to get more money out of them and they can afford to pay for it. No, they're going to pass it on to the to the people that are paying for the devices, which are either the hospitals or the individual consumers and the, collecting the that are using the health services and getting the new hips and getting the new knees. They're going to pay for it, or it's going to get paid for by Medicare with a higher price. They're going to negotiate a higher price point. So the government's going to wind up charging itself through the taxpayers for 2% more. I mean, this is just ridiculous. They just don't have a clear understanding of economics or math, and it's just it's frustrating. So what they're doing is, like I said, they're infringing on this ability. When I think of economic liberty, maybe the easiest thing for you to think about is think about the American dream. Own your own house, two cars in a garage, white picket fence, so on and so forth. You know, chicken in every pot, big screen in every room, whatever, you know. Not to get too carried away, new iPhone every year or two, or for those of us that are Android, maybe a new Galaxy S every couple of years, or at least every 2 years. But basically, it's the ability to know that you're going to be able to go out there and get a job because the government's not over-regulating, over-taxing, being overly bureaucratic, preventing you because the EPA is afraid that if you leaked water out, it's going to be considered to be a stream, and they're going to shut down your business because you have a stream on your property, and now it falls under their water rights or something silly like that. So that's basically when I talk about economic liberty. I'm going to expand on that a little bit and maybe some postings that will come up. Check out our WordPress. LagunaRoundtable.wordpress.com. Again, you can email us at Laguna Roundtable. You can reach us on Facebook, Laguna Roundtable. And you can also reach me on Twitter, at Righty Jim. This is Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. And like I said, we were talking about economic liberty. This is Righty Jim. Dr. Ari is off today. Economic liberty. Why are the people writing in Baltimore? How does that deal with economic liberty? Well, it deals with it in this way. The economic liberty question for Baltimore is that a lot of these inner cities, after going through 40, 50, some places even 60 years of progressive politics, because of bureaucracy and also basically when you create a larger safety net now, let me rephrase that. When you create a larger government bureaucracy or government handouts, you create a larger, quote unquote, safety net. But you also create a disincentive to work for many people, not everybody. Not everybody on the dole is lazy. Not everybody who's getting government entitlements is lazy or a slacker. Some of them people are truly needed. Some people need it because they've got short-term problems, and there's no problem with that. But when it comes endemic, when it becomes generational handouts, generational entitlements, that's where you have a problem with it. And that's where you've killed economic liberty in a lot of these large inner cities and a lot of these large urban areas through years of just constant handouts by the Democratic Party. And liberalism, it's just basically, there's no incentive to work. Why? The government takes care of me. Why do I need to work? Government's got a problem. And if you teach people long enough this, you know, if you keep beating them over the head long enough and keep giving them enough checks, they're not going to, I get the equivalent of $10 an hour sitting on my couch watching Judge Judy. Why do I need to work? I'm only going to get a job for $12 an hour anyway. No, that doesn't mean raise the minimum wage to 15 and make it more incentive. What it means is that you've killed the economic liberty. You need to look at the problem. That's why some of the people in Baltimore are writing. Sure, some of it's about Freddie Smith. Some of it's about economic liberty. But it's about knowing that there really isn't a way out of this, and we really need to fix that problem. And it's not more democratic problem or no, more democratic policies or more money or more handouts. Maybe it's job training. Maybe it's trade schools. World needs plumbers. World needs electricians. Those are nice high paid jobs. Union electricians, I think, probably make more than $40 an hour if you've been at it for a few years. That's 80 grand a year. That's a pretty dang good salary. Move yourself out of the inner city into the suburbs, or maybe even gentrify some of the suburbs. So that's some of the ideas there on fixing the economic liberty problem. There'll be a lot more, and it'll be a topic that we'll be continue to discuss for a long time because we're going to be paying for the sins of the Obama administration for a very long time. All right, KX93.5. We're going to roundtable. We're going to play a little bit of music, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll talk about something for you to Google. Google the Spratly Archipelago, and you'll understand what we're going to talk about next. A little bit of Beach Boys here coming up next. KX93.5, Laguna Roundtable.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. Gentle on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
Excitations. Good, good, good vibrations.
She's giving me the excitations.
Good, good, good vibrations.
She's giving me the
excitations.
Close my eyes. She's somehow closer now. Softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good
vibrations.
She's giving me
excitations.
Good,
good, good, good vibrations.
She's giving me excitations.
Good, 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 good vibrations.
She's giving me
was the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations, Laguna Roundtable, KX93.5. Website, KX93.5.com. Don't forget about our big fundraiser, K-Exclusive. That is next Saturday, June 6th. Please check out the website for that. You can get your tickets. We love to have you come because, again, we are a community-supported radio station, and you are the community in that part, and we are the radio station in that part. So it's a two-way street. We need everyone to help out with that, keep us on the air, and keep wonderful programs like Laguna Roundtable on the air. So we do appreciate that, and a big thank you to everybody who does attend and does contribute to the event. Okay, I asked you before the break to Google the Spratly Archipelago. Any of you out there did that? If you did, KX93.5-949-715-KXFM or 949-715-5936. If you wish to call in and tell me what it is, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's a group of, archipelago of basically nothing. It's a bunch of coral reefs out in the South China Sea. Now, the key phrase in that word, or the key part of that word, is China. China is terraforming that, meaning they are turning those coral reefs into islands by dredging up dirt from the bottom of the ocean there, and which isn't very deep in that part, and terraforming it by bringing it up to the surface and just piling it up and then compacting it and creating islands. They've built something like a couple of hundred hectares so far, which, yeah, I don't know what that is either. It's that silly metric thing again. It's a pretty good chunk of land, though. Looking at it, you can take a look at the picture. If you Google it, they'll probably show you the pictures of it. I don't know what it is. It might be, looks like maybe about 2,000 yards wide by, I don't know, maybe a mile long of new island they've created. Now, the U.S. Defense Chief, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, was at a conference in Singapore this week, or actually yesterday, and made a comment about that. The rhetoric's kind of heating up on this. It says, turning an underwater rock to an airfield simply does not afford the rights of sovereignty or permit restrictions on international air or maritime transport. About, I believe, something like $750 billion of goods are transited through that area on cargo ships. It's not exactly in, but very close to the sea lanes that go between Singapore, China, Hong Kong, Australia, then over to the U.S., North America, and also to Japan and to Taiwan, and maybe even into Vladivostok in Russia. So it's a highly trafficked area. Basically, what it is, what's behind all this? China. China is trying to expand their economics, or their economic and, more importantly, their military sphere of influence. China has been obviously a local player, and they're becoming a regional player. But now they want to project themselves into more of a super regional, shall we say, or more of a global player by expanding themselves. I believe this is from the most southern tip, or the closest tip of China, I believe is about 600 miles north of where this island is being created. So it's nowhere near. It's not like it's 4 miles offshore of China. It's closer to Vietnam and the Philippines. And Vietnam is not very happy because they do not want China projecting its power into its own backyard. Not that it's looking to be a regional power, but it just doesn't make them feel secure that with a Chinese airbase, and that's basically what it is, they've built an airstrip. I don't think it's because they're going to be bringing tourists into this island. They've got warships sailing around it at all hours, almost in a, not a blockade, but in an area to basically, you know, to basically let people know that they are basically considering this to be their own. And they're beginning to make territorial claims on this. They want a 12-mile exclusionary zone around it because they're claiming it as part of their territory. Beijing currently claims sovereignty over about 90% of the South China Sea, which many of these claims overlap Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Brunei. Brunei, an oil emirate. Yes, there are tons and there are probably billions, if not trillions, well, lots of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of oil, gas, and other possible metals and commodities under that part of the South China, or under the South China Sea. So it's not very far off Brunei, and Brunei is an oil emirate. So yes, China's looking to it. At this point, it's a war of words. Whether it ever become a shooting war is probably somewhat unlikely. I'm not really sure, aren't too many people really willing to get in a fight about this. But again, it doesn't make Vietnam feel secure. It's kind of one of those things where put it on your radar and keep watching it, stick a pin in it. The U.S. estimates there's some 800 hectares of dry land have been created in the last 18 months. And we expect that to continue to grow. They're not anywhere near being done on this. So it's a lot of land. If you look at the picture, I mean, it's a good chunk of land. You can put some housing up there and some 7-Elevens and KFCs and McDonald's. And why are we concerned? Well, you know what? Their projecting power is not something that's good for the U.S. We sent one of our frigates, Navy cruiser, the Shiloh, named for the Civil War battle, into Subic Bay in the Philippines to show that we consider Philippines a friend and we're going to be patrolling the area and not really listening to what the Chinese tell us. Now, I don't think we're going to sail up to this thing and lob a shell onto it. That'd kind of be an act of war. Well, it may not be an act of war. Just because it's interesting, maritime law, and I know someone who's a maritime law expert, and I did not talk to them about this, but I need to. Maybe we'll get some more information about it next week. Pretty much, as long as China makes this claim and nobody challenges them, then it kind of just goes. There's the process for the UN and the Law of the Sea Conference, and I believe there's some other things that cover this stuff. But it's kind of like getting an easement, if you understand that in legal parlance. Where, like, for example, if you're snowmobiling over someone's property for 20 years, and one day you stick up a fence and the guy runs on the fence and hurts himself. Well, yeah, it's his land, but he spent 20 years not enforcing his property right. He technically gave you a de facto easement. Same thing. If you just let China do this and you don't complain to the UN or any governing body that covers this, then you don't really have a right to complain in 20 years when China, you know, has a huge, huge air base down there, or a huge military base there. So that's kind of how this thing works. I'd like to see, you know, China wants to be a regional power. Now, the reason why today this is just China being China, I guess is the best way to describe it. China does not have the ability. They do not have a blue water navy. They do not have the ability to project power. They do not even have the capabilities to project power that Japan did in 1941 to send airplanes to Pearl Harbor for the attack that they did in December 7th, 41, or to try to invade the Midway Islands and wage a large naval air battle there. China has one aircraft carrier. They're building more, and actually they didn't build that when they bought it. It was a scrapped Russian aircraft carrier, I believe, that had been built by the French, possibly, that was in the Ukraine. And I believe they bought it from the Ukrainians at some point a couple of years ago, and then they've made it operational. But these things take time and take money. Now, China is having double-digit increases in its defense spending, so the money isn't a problem. But these things take time. The ability to basically learn to do air operations and support and logistics is not a simple thing. It takes years and years. Though we've done a very good job, from my understanding, of teaching Chinese carrier tactics and allowed their top commanders to come to our war college. So I'm sure they're pretty well versed in U.S. carrier tactics and U.S. air tactics and logistics and supply tactics. So it will still take them a long time because you need all of these ships, because you just don't send aircraft carrier out there and say, okay, go invade Vietnam. It doesn't work that way. You're going to need convoys for Marines. You need support ships. You need supply ships. You need protective ships. You need to run a ring of iron around the aircraft carrier. Not to mention, you need to bring it fuel, because fighter jets eat up jet fuel faster than just about anything else. So it's a large and complex operation to get all these ships coordinated, to sail in patterns, to cover large distances, to do ship-to-ship refueling. Have you ever seen that? Very complex task. Very dangerous. Lots of injuries, lots of deaths from that. Well, not lots, but some deaths from that. So it's not something that's just, okay, well, we're going to be able to, you know, launch a campaign off of four aircraft carriers on the west coast of America in 18 months. It doesn't work like that. 5 years, 10 years. Definitely be able to do that. But they don't have, like I said, what it's called a blue water navy, the ability to project power far beyond its chart. They have a white water navy. Whitewater means something that's close in, a couple miles, or when you talk about whitewater real estate, you talk about, you know, basically, you know, you're talking about beachfront property type of stuff. So whitewater navy means you can patrol your own coast, maybe patrol someone else's coast not too far away, but you can't go 1,000 miles out and see. They just to give you an example, China could not invade Taiwan today. They do not have the ability, the ship capability or the air capability to put a significant number of Marines, troops, army, whatever you want to call them, onto the island of Taiwan, supply them, sustain them, and fight a battle, get them offshore, resupply, replenish, airlift, and all that, to retake Taiwan, which is why they have not retaken Taiwan, because they don't have the military capabilities. Doesn't say they won't in 5 years, or maybe 10 years, have that capability. But today, they don't have that. So, which is why it's a threat to be looked at, to be watched going forward, but not something that we're going to really, really be concerned with today, because it's not something that is a problem today. But it goes on the got to keep the eye on this, because it's going to be a problem going forward with China. So as China being China continues to be China, we'll see how that works out. So, whoops. Well, you know, a couple of minutes before the hour, just about our time up, Laguna Roundtable. It's been your host, Righty Jim, doing a solo show this morning. Dr. Arby's on vacation. Hopefully we'll be back next week. KX93.5, I thank you for listening this morning. We're going to play a little bit of appropriate music. We'll play a little bit of China Girl by David Bowie to get us out of this. Full English Breakfast with your host, Jason Fetty, our 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. disc jockey of daily here on KX93.5. We'll be in a couple of minutes. And thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. See you next week. Have a good week, everybody. And please come to our event next Saturday. K-Exclusive. Check out the website for more information. KX935.com. Bye.
my little China girl. I hear